You are listening to Classical Mornings with Mike and Gene here at the new Classical FM. And next week, International Holocaust Remembrance Week, Vision TV is going to be broadcasting the Canadian premiere screening of a really interesting sounding documentary with an unlikely title. It's called The Good Nazi. And this is the story of Major Karl Plage, who during the Second World War saved hundreds of Jews in Lithuania. He accomplished this by creating a forced labor camp called HKP that protected Jewish men, women, and children from the SS. And joining us in the studio right now is the co-director of the film, incredible award-winning filmmaker Rick Bienstock. Welcome to the program.
Morning. Hey.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
I guess my first question is, well, it's a two-part question. I'll start with part one. How the heck have I never heard of this guy before?
Well, it's interesting because I had never heard of him before either.
Yeah.
And it's one of those stories that can easily get buried. There was one man, he's an American doctor, his mother was actually saved by this guy, and he became very curious about this story of this Major Plage that his mother kept saying saved Jews, but not in a very deliberate fashion, not somebody who was hiding
like
them.
Schindler, like, yeah.
So he started putting the pieces together and looking to see if there were other people who survived and pieced it together and wrote a book, and it's really an untold story.
Unlike Oscar Schindler, who was a civilian, this guy was an actual major. How on earth did he get away with it?
Well, what's very interesting about him is it really took a lot of piecing together, because he didn't actually take Jews, hide them somewhere.
Right.
What
he
did was he created this forced labor camp in Vilna. Lithuania was brutal during the Holocaust. And what he did was created a labor camp where he said he needed this Jewish workforce to fix vehicles. Hmm. Now, none of these Jews were mechanics. They were tailors. They were accountants. But they became mechanics. But he knew that. So he insisted that he needed that workforce. So that was step one in keeping them alive, was keeping them working. So the Nazis and the SS would see value in not killing them. And then when they felt that maybe they should be killing the wives, he said they need a tailor. They need people sewing. So he brought in sewing machines. So he did it in a much more
crafty,
quiet way.
Yeah.
And from what we glean, he had some of his cohorts kind of on side with him, because he really did... he did it very subtly. It was never spoken. It was all, you know, when people were, when he knew that the SS were coming in, he kind of hinted to the Jews that maybe there was something going on, maybe there was something that was coming down the line, and that they should be aware. He never, I'm actually not doing a good story of explaining this, but at one point where he knew the Germans that were going to come in, the SS, and slaughter everybody, he brought them all together to say, I'm being transferred, everybody's moving, but the SS and Nazis are going to come, and you know how good they are with refugees and you know, helping refugees resettle, which was a coded term for they're going to kill you, so you better hide. So he did it all in very subtle ways, and he was able to do this under the watchful eyes of the SS, which is amazing.
Unbelievable.
What a powerful actor he must have been. I mean, incredibly courageous to one minute to be following, to be a major, and yet...
To be a Nazi.
So, yes. Yeah. And yet be so compassionate towards human beings.
Well, that's why I think we felt the story was worth telling, because, you know, we hear so many things, like, I was just following orders during the Nuremberg trials, right?
Yeah,
that's what everybody says.
Yeah.
So he didn't denounce his... I mean, he had his Nazi card, right? He didn't... But he used that power in a subtle way, and he saved, you know, hundreds of Jews. And it's so interesting now, because then that resulted in hundreds and hundreds of grandchildren of people who are still alive today, who really owe their lives to the fact that he acted.
The other fascinating thing is that, I mean, because people don't know his story, a lot of people don't know, I mean, because this labor camp is one of the few that, or the only one that's not preserved in some way or another.
Well, the labor camp, the building itself, right now, that was the other thing that we felt, that because of urban renewal, that this building and the camps and the mechanic and that area are soon going to be destroyed and make way to condos like everywhere else in the world. But the building where all these people were housed, this, we felt this might be the last opportunity. We found built-in hiding places where the Jews had were able to, with his kind of subtle warnings, create hiding places for themselves. So when the Germans when they were retreating, that they were going in to kill everybody, and only the families who were able to hide in these hiding places that were done under the eyes of Major Plage, only they survived. All the Jews who didn't have hiding places were killed.
What a story. Yeah. Very, very powerful. And then, and did I not also read that scientists have come in to prove that there were hundreds of bodies buried there, and so they're not going to tear this building down?
We're not sure about them not tearing the building down, but we brought, we didn't bring, there are scientists from, under this archaeologist from the University of Hartford, now that we have the technology to use ground-penetrating radar and all of that, we can document the veracity of the stories of the survivors, because remember, the survivors are, they were all between 9 and 15 years old now, those that are alive now who are telling their story. So they remember things like masses of bodies being buried but not very deeply. So based on that kind of testimony and some diaries, they were able to do ground penetrating radar to say, yes, in two areas there is a mass grave that actually agrees with the stories that were told. So, you know, both the science story and the personal story. And we brought one of the survivors who was a young boy at the time, and he stands on the steps where his mother saved his life by hiding him during this very terrible day when they went in to kill all the children. All the children in this building, all of them, any child that wasn't hidden died. That's why there were so few survivors. And he's, you know, standing in the place where this happened, kind of 70 years after the fact. And it was so emotional for everybody.
I can imagine.
But he survived. And he survived thanks to this very brave Nazi.
How do you approach a topic like this as a director? Because like you say, this is a very emotional subject. Do you kind of have to remove yourself?
No, but
or do you allow yourself to be swept into it?
That's a good question. You know, people always ask that. I mean, I'm a child of Holocaust survivors, so it was kind of not from Lithuania, but it was still, it feels personal in that way. So I feel a real kinship with kinship. That's the something about survivors, right? I have a real soft spot, but. I mean, when you're making a film, you just want to be able to tell the story. Plage, he's not alive now. There's not a lot of footage of him. So it's how can we best convey the danger, the emotion, the horror? Yeah. And you just have to piece together all the elements. In this case, we did do some recreations. So there were so few pictures of Major Plage. So we did some dramatic recreations of the moment so that you could feel what it was like to be in that place.
Now, your title is co-director. Who is your co?
My co-director is this gentleman, Yaron Niski. He's from Israel and also kind of has a close association with the subject matter. And the writer was Simcha Yakubovich, who is a longtime colleague of mine, and we've made lots of films together. So it was really a kind of a group effort.
Before we let you go, without spoiling it, and tell me if the question I'm going to ask you is going to spoil it for people who want to watch it. What happened to him? Was he ever found out?
Well, he actually, in post-war Germany, there were some, not trials like the Nuremberg trials, but he felt so guilty about what happened. And he was acquitted in a German court, and he never felt good about being acquitted. He felt so guilty, but this happened years after, and to his surprise, because he did not know how many people he saved.
Right.
He was gone at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
But there were some Jews who came and testified on his behalf saying, if not for him, my life would have been saved. So he was acquitted and spent his life, you know, feeling like he did a terrible thing. I mean, not all Nazis carried that weight of guilt, but it gnawed at him. And there are some letters that he wrote to his wife while he was there that kind of give insight into his psyche, and the fact that he understood what was going on was really wrong.
Wow. This sounds like a very powerful documentary.
Doesn't it, though?
I want to thank you for A, making it, and B, coming in and joining us this morning and telling us about it.
Thank you. Thanks so much. So I hope you watch it.
All right. We've been speaking to co-director Rick Bienstock of The Good Nazi. This is an incredible documentary that is having its world premiere TV broadcast on Vision TV as a part of Holocaust Remembrance Week. It's happening on Monday, the 21st at 9 p.m. And here's where you can watch Vision TV. Rogers Channel 60, Bell 5-1213, Bell Channel 1161. Urge you all to do that. Thank you so much.
Thank you.